Coming up on today's edition of the Locked On Raiders podcast, we'll have news and notes in segment number one, including Kevin Ostreicher. He's the host of the Locked On Ravens show. He'll join the show to talk about Anthony Averett, let you know exactly what you should expect from the young cornerback that signed with the Raiders as a free agent from the Baltimore Ravens. Can he compete for a starting job in training camp? Well, Kevin will break all that down. And then, not only that, Jalen Ferguson and Tony Siragusa, two members of the Baltimore Raven family, they both passed away on Wednesday, so he'll tell you the kind of effect that that's having on the team. In segment number two, you'll hear my conversation with the great Lee Steinberg from Steinberg Sports. He joined my radio show on Wednesday to talk all things salary cap, talked about how teams could finagle the salary cap, what agents do when their players have a couple years left on their deal, but yet they need to go renegotiate, like the case of Darren Waller right now with the Raiders, and a whole lot more. And then your calls and text will close out the show. 707-654-4693. That's the Locked On Raiders podcast voicemail line. You'll hear that to close out in segment number three. All that's coming up on Thursday's edition of the Locked On Raiders podcast, June 23rd, 2022. Let's get it.
Your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Just Raiders. Win.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Just win.
Your team
Just
every
win.
Day.
Just win.
You ought to win as a Raider. Pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won.
And welcome in, Raider Nation, to another edition of the Locked On Raiders podcast. Thank you so much for making the show your first listen each and every day. Remember, you can find Locked On Raiders podcast free and available on all platforms. Today's episode is actually being brought to you by BlueNile.com. Make your moment sparkle with jewelry from BlueNile.com. All listeners of the Locked On Raiders podcast will get $50 off purchases of $500 or more. This podcast exclusive includes engagement. You got to use the promo code Locked On. It's all one word. At checkout. Let's go ahead and jump into the news and the notes of the day. And really, it's going to have a big Baltimore Raven feel, as you'll hear some sound bites from my guy Kevin Ostreicher from Locked On Ravens. I actually had him on my radio show on Wednesday, Unnecessary Roughness, Raider Nation Radio 920. Wanted him to talk about cornerback Anthony Averett and what Raider Nation, what the silver and black coaching staff should expect from Anthony Averett in training camp. Could he earn a starting cornerback position? Well, before that could happen, I actually found out about Jalen Ferguson, outside linebacker from the Ravens. He passed away at 26 years old on Wednesday, and I saw that by way of Mad Max Crosby. He had actually tweeted out, you know, rest in peace to Jalen Ferguson, and I realized that that was a guy that was in that 2019 draft class with Max Crosby, so clearly they were familiar with each other. That's how I was alerted to that. And then a little bit later on in the day, I was alerted to the fact that Tony Siragusa passed away at 55 years old in his sleep. And then I was told that his dad had passed away at 48 by way of heart attack. So clearly they had some stuff going on with some hereditary stuff, and that's awful. And I know that no Raider fan likes the name Tony Siragusa. I get it. No Raider fan does. We all remember what happened with Rich Gannon. We all remember the belly flop on him and him getting injured and the Raiders Super Bowl run over immediately. But when it comes to death, hey, look, man, all fandom, as far as I'm concerned, is put to the side. So rest in peace to Tony Siragusa. Of course, prayers out to his family, and definitely prayers out to the Ferguson family, as this young man passed away at 26 years old. I mean, that's a young kid. That is still an absolute young kid, and it's just awful. As of late, we've heard a lot of deaths around the sports world, and two of them on the same day for the Baltimore Ravens and Jalen Ferguson, outside linebacker, 26 years old, and Tony Siragusa, 55 years old. And I'll say this, I'm not a big fan of the Goose when he was playing, but I was a big fan of the Goose when he was a sideline reporter. I thought he did a hell of a job. I love the fact that on Fox, they left his mic hot, so all he had to do is, if he felt like he wanted to say something, boom, he could jump in. And with my experiences that I had in sideline reporting when I was in Texas doing high school football, the guy that I was working with always said, hey man, I'm gonna treat you like the Goose. The mic is always on. Whatever you want to just jump in and talk, you can. And so I always respected that. I love the fact that that's a nice element to the broadcast. Not many do that. Most of the time you hear, let's go down to the sideline and see what so-and-so has to say. That's what it usually is. But just to have the mic open all the time, it just gives it more of an organic feel. And so I always respected that from Tony Siragusa. So passing away at 55 years old in his sleep, I'm sure we'll hear about the absolute cause of death at some point, but just know that both of those guys passed away on the same day on Wednesday. And so, again, Kevin Ostreicher from Locked On Ravens, he did join my radio show. And before I can get anything in about Anthony Averett, I had to talk about Jalen Ferguson. I had to talk about the passing of Saragusa. First thing I asked him was about the heavy hearts that were going to be in that Raven locker room because they just wrapped up minicamp. He had just gone away not too long ago and was going to be returning in less than a month for training camp. So here's Kevin Ostreicher on the team having heavy hearts in that locker room.
Yeah, there certainly will be, and I think for any type of loss like this, especially for a teammate, someone who you're around all the time for these guys and who they've gotten to know so well. I mean, Jalen Ferguson coming out of Louisiana Tech, one of my favorite stories about him, just speaking to his character, is during the draft, the 2019 draft, on that first day, he was helping tornado victims out. And it speaks to what he did off of the field and how much he cared about just people. And so with him not being with this team anymore, with him being gone, I think that the Ravens, you know, they will have heavy hearts throughout this entire year for a very long time, you know, surrounding this tragic loss. But I think that they can rally around each other. The culture there is so strong. You mentioned John Harbaugh. They're going to be able to, I think, play this season out for him and just make sure that they do what they can for him.
So that's going to be tough right there. I mean, any Raider fan knows what happened with the Raiders a season ago, knows what happens in that locker room when they lost Henry Ruggs, and they didn't lose Henry Ruggs to death. I mean, obviously there was a death that was involved in the tragedy, but it wasn't Henry Ruggs, and you saw how much of a dark cloud that put over that Raiders locker room. I can only imagine what's going to go on in Baltimore losing their brother at an early age of 26 years old. So I also had Ostreicher on the show to talk about Anthony Averett. You know, what did he see last season from him when he was forced into action? Remember, there were so many injuries in the secondary that all of a sudden Anthony Averett had to step up and be a starter. He played 14 games, had 14 starts, and had 3 interceptions. So what did Kevin see from Anthony a season ago? And then you'll hear a couple follow-ups as well.
You know, based off what he was asked to do, I think he performed decently well overall. For him coming out of Alabama, there were some issues with him, especially early on in his career, getting his head around. He was pretty sticky in coverage, but he wasn't able to play the ball, I think, as well as the Ravens wanted him to, and that resulted in some penalties and some guys getting behind him. And when the ball was in the air, he couldn't really play. Even if he was right up on the guy, guys were making contested catches over him because he just didn't know where the ball was. But I think he corrected that over the course of a couple of seasons. And the Ravens, they could play the patient game with him for a while. They didn't necessarily have to force him into action pretty early, but then you mentioned 2021 was a very different story with Marcus Peters going down before the year, Marlon Humphrey missing the back half of the season with a torn pec. So he was elevated, you know, 3-4 spots up on the depth chart, as were most Ravens players last season, and was going up against number one guys for a lot of the year. And as their true number one corner, once those guys ended up leaving with injuries, such as Peters and such as Humphrey. But yeah, he performed, I think, overall pretty well based off of the assignments that he was given. You know, at this point, I think that he was tested in a lot of different ways, something that I don't think with those injuries we would have seen from him. They wouldn't have needed him as a number one corner to play all those snaps. And so he now has that full season, or somewhat of a full season, under his belt of playing as a number two, number one guy, and that can take that to Las Vegas and play a role there.
When it comes to being able to be around the ball and create turnovers, would you say that those interceptions were more of a product of being in the right place at the right time, or is he a hunter? Is he a guy that goes and looks for the ball and tries to create turnovers?
I think it is a little of both. I know in week one against Las Vegas, he was actually the beneficiary of a tip ball that kind of fell right into his hands. So that was, I think it was an overtime late in the fourth quarter. I can't remember exactly when it was late in that game. But I think that's a prime example of how he's just in the right place at the right time. But he has gotten better, I think, going out and just hunting for the football. And that's going to be a key part for him to kind of continue to improve upon, because those 3 interceptions that he had last season, you know, they were the first 3 of his career. He didn't have an interception in his first 3 seasons. He had the 3 last year. So it was an improvement from him. Again, he did play a lot more snaps in 2021 than in his first 3 seasons in the league. So with the role in Las Vegas, I think that, again, maybe he'll be in the right place at the right time in some of those instances, but he has gotten better at just being able to go find the football and go get it.
You know, something that we've continued to hear about Patrick Graham and his defense and expectations, especially from his corners, is to play that press man coverage. And Anthony Averett, from everything I've read, everything I've seen, everything I've heard, is pretty good at that. You know, even some folks say that top 10 corners as far as press man coverage. What did you see from him as a press man coverage? And he's not that tall, so what makes him so good at being a press cover?
Yeah, he is not tall, around 5'11". So he's physical. He's able to get physical at the line. It's good for him to be able to, again, I mentioned the stickiness and coverage. He doesn't really get thrown off by physicality. I feel like it's really only against those, like, very big, like, height mismatches, body mismatches, that you could see him get a little overwhelmed, where he's just, from a pure size perspective, not able to keep up with that for an entire 60 minutes. But I think that he has been able to use his physicality better over the course of his career, and again, continuing to improve on that, I think, is really good. But the Ravens do ask a lot of their cornerbacks, especially now with Don Martindale now in New York. That defense isn't necessarily fully there anymore, but Don Martindale's defense, corners were a key part of that defense, and they were relied upon to stick in coverage for a very long time and get covered sacks, which was a big part of what they did. So Averett had to learn to do that, not get thrown off, not get beat off the line immediately, and I think that was a part of his game that did improve over the course of his time with the Ravens.
So there's Kevin Ostreicher right there talking about Anthony Averett. You heard a couple follow-ups as well, talking about what he saw from him, you know, just a little bit of style of his play. So the final question that I asked him was, can he envision Averett going to training camp in less than a month and earning a starting corner position?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be shocked if he got it at all. I know that the Raiders do have some talented corners there, a couple of them, and I think that even though there is a lot of depth for the Raiders, per se, you know, the new acquisition, Rocky Sin and all those players are there, but even if Averett doesn't win a starting job, I think he is a phenomenal, if you want to put him at third cornerback option, fourth cornerback option, I think he's phenomenal depth, even if he's not playing 95-90% of snaps. And I don't necessarily think that means that Averett's a backup and only plays 5% of snaps. He can still be used in a bunch of different roles. But I think he certainly has the talent, and he's done a lot to go in and prove himself as a starter. And, I mean, he did it in Baltimore. Again, what if you would ask me at the beginning of last season if Anthony Averett would have been the top cornerback on this team at the end of the season, I would have said, what are you talking about? You know, there had been a lot of injuries, and there were. So he had a ton of opportunities there. He gained really valuable experience, and I think he can carry that over this year.
There's host of Locked On Ravens, Kevin Ostreicher, giving you a little bit of breakdown of Anthony Averett. And you heard him at the end right there. That experience that he gained may be able to carry over for the Raiders. And look, he's on the approve-it deal, so it's not like he's a guy that was given a big-time free agent deal. He's a guy that's going to have to go to training camp and really try to ball out. But from everything that I've read, everything I've heard, he was a top 10 press corner in 2021. That was from Josh DeBow from the AP, and you know that he never puts out anything positive unless it's facts. I mean, that's the one thing. We talk about him putting out a bunch of negative stuff, but it's always facts that he's putting out. It's just that you don't like to read it because normally it's never very good when it comes to the Raiders. But he did put out the other day about Averett being a top 10 press corner in 2021. So if that's exactly what Patrick Graham and company are going to do a lot and they want to do with their corners, then he does have an opportunity to go out there. And so that's kind of one of those guys that I'm really going to be paying attention to in training camp to see how he does and see who's going to earn those starting corner positions. Not necessarily who's going to be the number one corner, but who's just going to earn the starting positions for the Silver and Black. So that's all I got for you for segment number one of today's Locked On Raiders podcast, news and notes of the day. Coming up in segment number two, you'll hear my conversation I had on Wednesday on Raider Nation Radio 920 with the great Lee Steinberg from Steinberg Sports. Breaks down the salary cap and a whole lot more. Before we get to that, though, I do want to tell you about rockauto.com. I've been telling you about rockauto.com for a very long time. They're a family business, been serving auto part customers online for over 20 years. I tell you that, and that is great, but I also tell you about the way you can save a whole lot of money, and who doesn't want to do that? Everyone wants to save money. Rockauto.com is going to help you do that. They can save way more money than you're going to save at the chain store or the car dealership, sometimes 30%, 50%. There's been times that they save you 100% more than at those other spots. So go to the website today, rockauto.com. They'll have every single part that you're looking for. Make, model, you punch it in, and then they'll, boom, they'll tell you the parts that you're looking for. You buy them, they'll come straight to your house. You don't even have to leave the comforts of your home. You fix your car, you'll be good to go. RockAuto.com is a website. Go check out all the parts available for your car or truck. The only thing I ask you to do while you're there, there's a box that said, how'd you hear about us? You write Locked On Raiders Podcast. That's how they know that I sent you and I'm doing my job. Great selection, great low prices. All the parts your car is ever going to need is at one spot. That's RockAuto.com.
Your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, Raider Nation, here we go. Segment number two of today's Locked On Raiders podcast. Time to jump into my conversation I had on Wednesday on Raider Nation Radio 920 with the great Lee Steinberg from Steinberg Sports, great sports agent. And, you know, I was already going to do a show. I planned on doing a show sometime this week talking about the salary cap. And then I had an opportunity to talk to Lee, and I thought, you know what, I can go ahead and kill two birds with one stone. I know that he has a lot of respect for the Silver and Black. I know that he was a season ticket holder of the Raiders, and I just knew that that conversation was going to come out. So a lot of good stuff on Wednesday that I discussed with Lee Steinberg. So here is that conversation with the great Lee Steinberg from Steinberg Sports. Pleased to have now on the phone lines one of the best to do it. That's Lee Steinberg from Steinberg Sports. And Lee, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. It's an honor to get to talk to you. Wanted to have you on for multiple reasons, including talking about salary cap and how as an agent you go in and try to negotiate for your client and you come away with some big mega deal and all the fans say, wait, how are they getting this under the salary cap? How do you go about it as an agent? How do you work that angle?
So the definition of what counts against the cap for cap purposes is a formula that takes a contract. So let's suppose it's a four-year contract and there's a bonus of $10 million. So what the cap does is it amortizes that signing bonus over 4 years. So $2.5 million a year counts against the cap. And then it takes the whole salary and adds those two things together, and that gives you your cap number. So the key to structuring contracts is to stay away from those huge salaries, because every penny of that counts against the cap, and constantly redoing the contract. So when you hit a year that's scheduled to be $30 million, instead of that, you reduce the salary to $5 million, you get a signing bonus of $25 million, and then that gets amortized and does not count. It counts over the length of the contract. So that's really the key, and it's having key players who have loaded contracts, especially quarterbacks, willing to restructure their contract, which you can do once a year.
And so if you continue to restructure contracts, one contract after the other, how much does that hurt the later on, down the road? You know, we always hear about kicking the can down the road. How much does that hurt in the long run?
It doesn't, because you can do the same process once a year, so nice. You can do it over and over and over again. You can keep converting salary into bonus and dropping the salary. So what you really don't want to have is just a massive salary against the cap. It's part of the reason that people don't want to use a franchise tag, because that's just straight salary against the cap. So structuring with bonus and pushing the cap hit out, you can continue to do that over and over and over again, and there's ultimately no consequence.
Talking to the great Lee Steinberg right now on Unnecessary Roughness, Raider Nation Radio 920. So as far as certain organizations being able to have this opportunity to do this, are there certain organizations that can't do it because they're not, as what some will say, is cash rich?
Not really. Basically, let's remember that when I started back in 1975, every team made $2 million as its share of the National TV contract. That figure last year was $200 million. Mm. Pro football teams are swimming in money. They just, in the midst of a cratered economy and a pandemic, renegotiated a new TV contract. So if they made $200 million last year, Fox and CBS raised what they're paying by 83%. So they, in essence, just under doubled it. And so that'll mean eventually you'll have teams making, you know, $350 million per year just from television. And that pays for basically everything. And then you have gate and new stadia with jumbo scoreboards and luxury boxes. And you got revenue coming from all over. So the old concept of small market, big market doesn't really apply here, because they take the biggest single revenue source and they share it equally among 32 teams.
Talking right now with the super agent Lee Steinberg from Steinberg Sports here on Raider Nation Radio 920. Now, Lee, we're here in Las Vegas. How much is the gambling revenue? How much has that helped increase all the money that the NFL continues to create?
Well, I think ultimately we'll see pari-mutuel betting in at stadia across the country. I think you'll be able to walk up to a different level and put down a bet, and there are unbelievable amounts of bets that can be made on a game.
Right.
Everything from, you know, who's going to win the opening toss to who kicks off to who scores the first time. I mean, there's an creativity is the only barrier to how many potential bets there are. And I think that will happen. And, I mean, what we found out about Las Vegas, because the primal fear of sports always was to have gambling connected with sports, and here we are. But what no one expected when the Golden Knights went there was you could sell ice hockey in the desert, and the town would respond with this immense amount of enthusiasm, and people haven't been tracking the fact that Las Vegas now is a large city in the country with a group of residents, and then the way they embrace the Raiders now. I had season tickets to the Raiders. They're the only team I had season tickets to. And back when they were in Oakland, early on when I was in law school, and I sat next to a young guy who had sort of red, blonde, strawberry blonde hair, and he would always shout and scream. And his name was Mark, and that was Mark Davis. And so I've known him since the 70s.
I remember that, and you told that story back in 2019 in Atlanta at your party, and that's when Mark Davis received the Owner's Humanitarian Award, and that was real special. He was there in attendance, and I remember him leaving that party kind of quickly because he was trying to get Cliff Branch into the hall. It didn't happen then, but Lee, this year in Canton, Ohio, Cliff Branch, even though he's not going to be there, his family's going to be there to see him enshrined in the Hall of Fame. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's fabulous. I sat, again, for years in the stands. I mean, players give you tickets to every game. But the Raiders, because I hadn't started my career yet, I had the season tickets. I followed them to Los Angeles, back to Oakland. But Cliff Branch, what a sensational deep threat he was. And well-deserved.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So excited. Cannot wait to be there in Canton, Ohio to see him enshrined into the hall. Again, we're talking with Lee Steinberg here on Unnecessary Roughness, Raider Nation Radio 920. Just got a couple more questions for you. We've seen contracts like Deshaun Watson, $230 million guaranteed. We've seen Kirk, whatever his name is in Minnesota now. I forget his name. But anyway, he's getting a fully guaranteed contract. What are your thoughts on guaranteed contracts in the NFL? Are we starting to lean that way? I was talking about Kirk Cousins. That's what I meant.
Well, the first breakthrough, frankly, was in the draft. And traditionally, contracts were not guaranteed. So the player got the signing bonus, and he could be cut at any point from his salary. All the contracts in basketball and baseball were basically guaranteed for skill, injury, couldn't be cut for being a bad player. So when you saw those contracts signed, and Mike Trout was going to get $400-something million. He was guaranteed all that money no matter what happened. So the first breakthrough was that in the first round, there are now about three-quarters of the top 32 picks have fully guaranteed contracts for skill and injury for all 4 years. Then, as you go down the rounds, it becomes 3 years guaranteed, one not guaranteed, and then as you get in the second round, it's 2 years guaranteed, two not guarantees. So the reality is that when they went ahead and signed Deshaun Watson to guaranteed money, meaning that if he was hurt, he'd still be paid. If he was not a good player, he'd be paid. The only you'd have to look and see how the contracts were, but the only protection that the Browns have is that if he were suspended for discipline, usually that's an exception to the guarantee. So that if the off the field conduct is it probably takes him off the hook for that period in which he's suspended.
Yeah, and that's what I think that everyone's waiting to see exactly how that happens. And would that be the reason why they gave him that, like, $1 million base salary? So that's the money that he's actually going to get his suspension money taken out of?
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reality is that the league's got a whole series of issues going on between ownership and players, and domestic violence is a real hot button for the league because they lived through the Ray Rice experience and we're in a general societal framework where it's been Me Too and heightened awareness. So, you know, I expect that they probably will go ahead and suspend him for some serious amount of time.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people are expecting. And Lee, this is great stuff. Final question for you. How does the approach when your player that you're representing has far outplayed his contract and he might have a couple years left on his deal, but he doesn't have guaranteed money, for example, like Darren Waller has currently with the Raiders. We know he's better than the 17th highest paid tight end in the league, and they're negotiating right now. But how is that approach? How do you go and approach the team about trying to renegotiate that deal?
The best way to do it is quietly behind the scenes, and it's to put together a powerful negotiation document, a packet or a deck that has everything you just talked about. It would have statistically how, in terms of number of catches and yardage and touchdown catches and everything statistical, and then honors and Pro Bowl, and you would now do comparables and look at who is out there that he's better than, he's playing better than, and try to bridge off their contract. But if you do it quietly behind the scenes instead of demanding publicly, then you don't have a team that feels like they're up against the wall and being forced, and they can announce that they did it for their purposes because they reward, you know, a great performance. And he's certainly all of that. And so the best way to get traded is never to make a trade demand. The best way to get a contract is to do it quietly behind the scenes and just try to illustrate where the market ought to be and where the player ought to be.
That makes a whole lot of sense, and that's why you're the best in the business. That's Lee Steinberg from Steinberg Sports. Lee, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. We do appreciate you. Very informative, and I look forward to talking to you down the line.
Thanks. Go Raiders.
It's always great to catch up with Lee. It's always fun to be at his parties around the Super Bowl time. He puts on some of the best parties ever. And I'll tell you right now, it's a star-studded affair. I know Raider Nation is not a big fan of Patrick Mahomes, but that was the first time I met Patrick Mahomes. Lee had actually walked him around, Aaron Jones, and others. He had a bunch of different clients that he was walking around, just introducing them to the media. He was very smart about what he did. He let us know that Patrick Mahomes was going to be a star. He also said, hey, you're not going to see a lot of endorsement deals from him right away. What we're going to do is kind of build up his brand as far as on the field first, and then boom, strike while the iron is hot. And that's exactly what they've done. And I'm sure you noticed at the end when he was talking about how to get a contract extension done, and he mentioned being quiet, handle your business. You know, you don't demand a trade, and you don't demand to get paid. If you do, it makes things that much more difficult. And I go to Darren Waller, who is the subject that I asked Lee about, and, you know, I just think that Darren's doing everything the right way, right? He's being quiet. He's putting his head down. He's going to work. He was at OTAs, which are voluntary. He was at mandatory minicamp. He's ready, preparing himself for training camp, as he told Dan Patrick just the other day. You heard that here on the show. And, I mean, he's just doing things the right way. I believe that he's going to get that contract extension taken care of. I don't know exactly how the Raiders are going to structure it or do it, but I do believe some guaranteed money is going to go his way. So he's happy. He's out there in the mix and part of that three-headed monster that is the Raiders offense when you have Devontae Adams, Hunter Renfrow, and also Darren Waller. I just think that that's responsible possible. That's what they have to do. Give that three-headed monster an opportunity. I know some others don't believe that, and that's fine, but that's just my gut feeling. That's what I think is going to happen. So hopefully you enjoyed that conversation with the great Lee Steinberg. Coming up in segment number three, your calls and texts straight off that Locked On Raider podcast voicemail line, 707-654-4693. Before I get to that, though, do want to tell you about Built Bar. I've been talking about Built Bar for a very long time, and I check out the website each and every day, and man, oh man, I'll tell you, some of the stock is really going down. It is summertime right now. You can tell that a lot of folks are going ahead and stocking up, filling up their cabinets with their Built Bars, a great taste in protein bar. Very low in calories, high in protein, very low in sugar, but high in great taste. And they have some great flavors to choose from, but you got to get them while you can. Caramel brownie, fantastic. Brownie batter, that's actually a Built Bar puff. Churro, that's a Built Bar puff. Those have marshmallows in it. Banana cream pie, coconut marshmallow. And then if you want an original one, how about cookies and cream or mint brownie, or really taking it back to the OGs, coconut. Cherry Barcia, coconut almond. Those are some of the original Built Bars when I first started talking about it many, many moons ago. So whatever Built Bar you want, whatever is your favorite flavor, go check out the website right now, Built.com. Make sure you restock before your favorite flavor is gone. Built.com, promo code is LOCK15. It's all one word. You'll save 15% off your order when you go to check out. Again, Built.com, promo code LOCK15.
Your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Here we go, Raider Nation. It's segment number three of today's Locked On Raiders podcast. Your calls and texts straight off that Locked On Raider podcast voicemail line, 707-654-4693. Let's start things off with Chuck Raider in the 512. He's called to talk about Ndamukong Suh and what he thinks about the thought of the Raiders signing him and why they don't necessarily need him. Here he is, Chuck Raider in the 512.
Q, what's up? This is Chuck Raider from the 512. Love the show. You're doing a great job, man. Keep it rolling. I wanted to talk about Suh and perhaps signing him. I love the new regime. They're holding off. They're not going to overspend for a 35-year-old D lineman. NFL's a young man's game, bro. I don't understand these Raider fans and their infatuation with Suh. The Raiders drafted two young D tackles. I mean, they're going to go with the 3-4 and a rotation. They're going to have a bunch of those guys. That's why they signed so many D tackles as well. They like to keep those guys fresh in the middle, but as far as Suh is concerned, I wouldn't give the guy, I mean, even if he plays, he's only going to play like one or two downs in the series, and like, again, it's another, I mean, I'm not saying Sue's not a good player. He is. He's probably a great player. He's won a Super Bowl, all that. I'm just saying at 35 in the NFL, it's gone, bro. It's gone. You can't just keep going. The Father Time loses to no one. And, I think there's other guys that may be able to come in and do a good job and play D tackle for him and at a lot younger age and probably a lesser amount. All right. Keep up what you're doing. Love the show.
There he goes. That's Chuck Raider in the 512. Thank you for the call. Really good stuff. And, you know, you bring up some good points when it comes to the young guys. Matthew Butler out of Tennessee, Neil Farrell Jr. out of LSU. Those aren't going to be full-time guys, no doubt. But part of a rotation, like you mentioned, that could be something. It could be. You could be onto something. Hankins, Nichols, Billings. You know, you got Farrell Jr., you got Butler. I'm not saying everybody's going to make the team, but, I mean, there's plenty of defensive tackles on there. Pico's on there. There's options there. Vernon Butler's an option. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are going to be competing for those spots. So, I mean, you could be right. You know, the Raiders could be in good position, and if one or two of those rookies could really step up, like if Matthew Butler, who a lot of people are very high on, if he could step up, maybe you don't need a Suh. I don't know, but you bring up some good points, and right now there are a lot of defensive tackles. There's just nobody that we know as a household name as far as a difference maker, but you never know. One could develop in training camp. Thank you so much for that call. I do appreciate you. Next up, I got a text from Raider Will from the 816. It says, Q, Raider Will out the 816. Please show love to Most Known Unknown. He said what I was thinking about the Eager article from Pro Football Focus. Jay Mack has to be a top three play caller, top five at worst. This constant disrespect to our organization and staff and personnel is sickening. In the words of Nipsey Hussle, minor setback for a major comeback. It's my favorite. Applies in this situation. R.I.P. Nip. That's from Raider Will from the 816. Thank you so much for that text, my man. And yeah, I totally understood Most Known Unknown's call. It was really good stuff. And again, with Pro Football Focus, and that's why I had Eric on the show. That's why I brought that conversation to the show. They penalize you for the run game. And he said that on there. Hey, we penalize for the run game because it's not as effective as the passing game. And so we know that a balanced offense, at least I feel a balanced offense is the way to go. And Josh McDaniels is going to definitely have a balanced offense. He's going to definitely be run heavy. So that's part of it right there. Also, you got to think about the fact that the last two seasons, who was his quarterback? Mac Jones, a rookie, and Cam Newton, who's declining. So you also have to think about that as well. So I do expect him to be a top five play caller this year, but I kind of understood where Eric was coming from, but I also understand Raider Nation questioned it because I questioned it as well, especially when I saw guys like Kellen Moore up there and you know, Byron Leftwich, who I think he did a good job. I know he's up and coming, but I don't think he's established himself as, you know, just such a phenomenal play caller. So, yeah, I could definitely understand where you guys are coming from. A lot of good stuff. But that's, again, that's why I like to hear both sides of the story. So thank you so much for that text. I appreciate you. Up next, got a call from the guy in Kentucky. He's calling to talk about Darren Waller and the fact that he doesn't believe the Raiders are going to give him a new deal. And he explains why. Here he is, the guy in Kentucky.
Q, it's the guy from Kentucky. Hey, you're becoming my favorite radio show. I love listening to you every day, but, man, I got to tell you, buddy, I got to shake you. I know you're drinking the juice. You're not seeing what's out in front of you, and you're bringing it. You're bringing it. When I last called, I said 80% Waller's going to be traded. I hate to break the news to you, buddy. It's now up to 85%, maybe even 90%. Let me tell you why. First off, you had Eric Eager, great interview. He's the first guy I've heard nationally say that Waller's not in the Raiders' plans, which is wrong. It's not that Waller's not in the Raiders' plans. They just don't need to sign Waller, okay? They love him as a tight end. I love him as a tight end. You are caught up in that three-headed beast. That three-headed beast is not going to happen. It's not, because we have needs. We've got interior D-line needs. We've got O-line needs. We've got secondary lockdown needs. We've got problems that we need to fix, and we don't need to sign Waller. All my friends were like, well, I don't even know who they're going to sign first, Renfro or Waller. I'm like, they're going to sign Renfro because he's a slot receiver, and those don't grow on trees, and we've got a baller that tied in already sitting there behind him waiting to play. So here's what's going to happen. Waller is going to make the call. He's going to make the move. They're not going to sign him. They're not going to re-sign him. They don't need to. But so he's either going to have to decide, am I going to play for this team or am I going to put myself out there? He's putting himself out there now. He's doing the circuit. He's on the thing. I understand he's got that blue line network, but come on. The bottom line is they're not going to sign him. They're going to go ahead and possibly try to fill these needs with their salary cap. Now that he's got a girlfriend in Vegas, maybe he'll stay, but he's not getting signed this year by the Raiders. Or they're going to trade him for a need. Hate to tell you this, buddy. You heard it first from the guy from Kentucky. Go Raiders.
There he goes. That's the guy in Kentucky. And I talked about this in segment number two. I know there's some folks that don't believe Darren Waller is going to get an extension. He's going to have to make a decision like the guy in Kentucky just said. You know, he doesn't think that Darren Waller is going to get some guaranteed money. He's just going to have to play it out or they're going to trade him. I don't know. I don't believe that. I do think that they're going to give an opportunity to see what this three-headed monster would look like. And I think that that's responsible. You know, why would you want to take away from some of your weapons when you have the AFC West that you have to deal with? I mean, you got the Chiefs, you got the Chargers and the Broncos. All are going to be tough outs. I think you have to have as many weapons as possible, but you could be spot on. You could be right. They could absolutely do nothing. He does have 2 years left on his deal, so technically, I mean, he's under contract. If he doesn't want to play, he doesn't want to play, and maybe they can move him for something like you suggested. I just don't see that happening. I think that he's pretty confident, and his agents are pretty confident that they're going to get something done. But you could be spot on, my man. You really could. We'll have to wait to see exactly how it all shakes out. So thank you so much for that. I do appreciate you. And I believe I got time for one more text. We'll take it from North Texas Raider. Said, what up, Q? This is North Texas Raider. You were asking on Unnecessary Roughness what our most memorable game was. And for me, it has to be that 2017 week 4 or 5 night game against the Chiefs. That season was a mess, but that game was a masterpiece. I just remember at the end of that game in overtime, the Raiders getting chance after chance after chance at the goal line. Cooper had one of his best games of his career, but the only thing I remember is Crabtree, and everyone knew at the end Carr was going to him, and they still couldn't stop him. That was probably the most emotionally invested I've ever been in a football game, and that includes the 03 Super Bowl, which actually made me physically ill. Anyway, love what you do for the nation. Raiders. That's from North Texas Raider. And, yeah, that's that game that a lot of people referenced, man. That was that game where Marshawn Lynch got kicked out early. It was a Thursday night game against the Chiefs. He got kicked out early because Marcus Peters put a late hit on Derek Carr, one of the offensive linemen. I don't know if it was Donald Penn or who it was, but went after Peters, and Marshawn Lynch comes running off the bench. And he gets booted out of the game. I think that, okay, there's no way the Raiders are going to win this one. They find a way to battle back, and then they had about, I don't know, four or five cracks at it at the goal line with basically no time on the clock. Looked like they won, then it looked like they lost, then it looked like they lost again, then it looked like they won, and then they finally did win. It was crazy. It was one of those heart attack games, but it was a hell of a performance. You're right about that. It was a great comeback and something to really feel good about, right? I went to work the next day. I remember went with my head up high. I was in Central Texas. I went in with my head up high, and everyone knew, oh, yeah, Q's feeling good about himself. The Raiders got that victory on Thursday night, so he's going to talk trash all Friday. And I did. It was a great Friday. No doubt about it. So that was a really good one, man. North Texas Raider, thank you so much for that text. I do appreciate you. And Raider Nation, thank you so much again for making the show your first listen each and every day. Remember, you can find the Locked On Raiders podcast free and available on all platforms. Man, we're trucking along. We're going to keep the party rolling. More calls and texts off that Locked On Raider podcast voicemail line will be coming up tomorrow. We'll have more news and notes of the day as we get ready to close out the week really strong and head into the weekend. Appreciate all the love. Appreciate all the support. Raider Nation, take care of yourself. Until tomorrow, take care of your family. Love on your family. And most importantly, as always, just win, baby.